And as I introduced, Colin McCann, the internationally best-selling author of six novels and three collections of stories, born and raised in Dublin. He has been the recipient of so many international honors, can't get into them. But I do think that we should mention, among other things, that you know, he has elected the Irish Arts Academy, sir, you know, the 2010 Best Foreign Novel Award in China, an Oscar nomination, named as Esquire's Best and Brightest Short Films, everything in this country, must be nominated for an Oscar in 2005. You know, this is Colin McCann, first of all, you're very welcome. Paul Sherrod.
Gurmila Maga, so nice to be talking with you this morning. I paid a lot of money for all those awards.
But, you know, again, first of all, happy Father's Day to yourselves.
And to you.
And to me, that's right. Okay. That's probably the last time we'll get acknowledgement. Well, we might get another tie tomorrow, if you never know.
I hope so.
Colin, can you, first of all, before we get on to the topic of Molly Bloom and Bloomsday tomorrow, the celebrations, your own acknowledgement and indeed a pioneer, particularly on the East Coast here in New York in particular, was an undertaking that very few would tackle in the first place. And because perhaps, you know, leading up to your own spotlight on James Joyce and in particular, again, Ulysses, most people, there were a couple of categories of people. There were those who may have read some, half, and the odd few who got through Ulysses, you know, and there were those who said they did. But tell us a little bit about how you would tackle something so extraordinarily complicated and bring it to the fore.
That's, you know, it's so interesting because it is indeed a complex novel, but in certain ways it's also a simple book, but nothing is simple, especially, I suppose, what we would think of as simplicity. But on the surface, it's a novel about a man who walks around Dublin. He's a cuckold who walks around Dublin for 24 hours. At the same time, it's a vast compendium of human experience. And this is what makes the novel so sort of gorgeous and challenging. And part of its beauty for me is its difficulty, right? In that sort of Yeatsian notion that all things that are excellent are somehow difficult as well. But, you know, one of the things that I've always said, my son, my 19-year-old son, John Michael, was studying Ulysses this year out in Colorado College. And he said to me, Dad, how do I, you know, go about, you know, engaging with this book? And I said, well, listen, what you really should do is listen to the last chapter first. And in fact, A.D. Maloney, who we'll be talking about in a moment,
yeah,
has a beautiful recording online of Molly's soliloquy. And so John Michael did that. And then I told him, go to you know, the chapter about Bloom eating breakfast, because it's quite one of the quote-unquote easier chapters. And start to jump around a little bit in the book. And then, once you get a taste for it, you know, go back to the beginning and allow yourself to be confused. Because actually confusion is okay. And he was sort of like charmed by this notion that it's okay to be confused by a book and to not understand it all. In today's world, it seems that we always want to be told how, you know, what to think and how to think. Sometimes the mystery is in not understanding, and sometimes the beauty is in not understanding. And I have to say for myself, I mean, I didn't read Ulysses until I was in my mid-20s. And then I didn't really read it until I was sick in hospital, just a few years ago, all the way through. And, you know, this is, I don't know, 15 years ago or so. And when I finally got to it, and I realized that my heart was sort of blown open, and not only did I think it was a gorgeous book, but it informed me, as an Irishman, of how Irish I happened to be, and also gave me access to a history that I hadn't really known before. So that my grandfather was alive, you know, in 1904, and my great-grandfather, whom I never met, but somehow I could meet them through the pages of this book. So that's how it, that's how it worked for me.
Yeah, to say that he was extraordinarily popular, if we go back to, you know, another famous work of his, The Dead, in 1904. He was considered, to be extraordinarily radical. Mm-hmm. And by the time Ulysses came along, some of his own fans and those around him kind of thought, well, in addition to the conflicts and the difficulties of reading, never mind writing the book, he wasn't, it wasn't the time, or was it, for Ireland to go through a transformation into accepting, you know, again, a style that didn't exist before.
That's right. I mean, it was radical in all senses. I mean, it was radical in that he was inhabiting the consciousness of, you know, these working class characters. It was radical in that he was looking at, you know, gaining these epiphanies. He was looking at the lives of women, ordinary people on the street, finding music in the ordinary, you know, restoring life where it wasn't necessarily no life. And he was hated for it in many places, banned in many countries, including over mm-hmm. here. I remember in the 70s and 80s in Ireland, there was very little Joyce paraphernalia around. You know, we knocked down 7 Eccles Street, where Molly actually does her soliloquy from, and there was one or two little Joyce pubs, but they were obscure references. You can't walk around Dublin now without... Mm-hmm. Actually, there's a funny line in Ulysses. It says, "A great puzzle to cross Dublin without passing a pub." And it's true. It's hard to pass Dublin without cross Dublin without passing a pub. But the bigger puzzle nowadays, great puzzle to cross Dublin without being reminded of Joyce. He's everywhere. Statues and... you know, all sorts of literary tours. And it's really only in the past 25 years that this is, you know, we've realized what we actually had. And we have one of the great voices of literature right up there with Shakespeare, you know. And this is an extraordinary thing. And, you know, what I love about Bloomsday, Adrian, is it feels to me like the thinking person's Paddy's Day.
Hmm.
Because, you know, it's great fun. We can celebrate our Irishness. We can celebrate our history, but also we can go forward in all sorts of new ways. Which is what, you know, Adrian does in her adaptation. She takes, so she's adapted it as Yes at the Irish Rep, but she takes this character of Molly Bloom, and not only does she inhabit her from 100 years ago, but she brings her forward to where we are now. And maybe she even brings her forward 10, 20 years from where we are at this moment. This is a sort of an amazing feminist interpretation of, a sacred text. But she finds in it all these new spaces. And so she's able to go in and discover things that were there that some people didn't really know were there in Mali. And she, so it's about power, and it's about desire, and about dynamics. And it really is quite an extraordinary theatrical experience to watch her up on stage, you know, become this Dublin woman. You know, most people thought, you know, oh, Molly Soliloquy, it's dirty, you know, mm-hmm. Oh, it has lots of smutty words and blah, blah, and or it's vaguely, you know, pornographic, or it's too difficult, and you know, and none of those things are actually true. It's kind of like the Song of Solomon, an Irish working class Song of Solomon. You know, it's sort of celebrating sex and desire and want, but also incredibly lonely and you know, and a woman looking for a place in the world and contemplating the nature of what it means to be a woman, not only like 100 years ago, but mm-hmm. today.
To Aideen is terrific. She's amazing. You know, and daughter of Paddy Maloney,
yeah.
You know, the chief of the chieftains. But again, I think she allows New York audiences, you know, to hear this Joycean miraculous work of art.
Right.
You know, as it's intended. Now, let modesty not prevent you from you know, from telling us how you took that, you know, that complex book and actually, you know, wove it into something that we can actually, you know, follow and understand. So you take the book. And again, as you say, you know, when you were in hospital, you read it for the first time. So, how does a Colin McCann take a book like that and say, okay, do you do it with the, you know, with a magic marker, or how do you go about it? How did you go about it?
You do it with great trepidation, and I have to say that the original credit goes to Aideen, because she did the lion's share of the work, that she had a vision for what her character was going to be. So we take the last soliloquy, which if she did the whole soliloquy, it would have taken about 3.5 or 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
We've taken it down to about 75 minutes now. And, like, trust me, yeah. Trying to edit Joyce, it's like, you know, I don't know, it's stepping into, you know, the realm of heroes,
mm-hmm.
And saying, okay, here I go now, and presuming to know what he intended, presuming to think that you might be able to use a scalpel on this thing to make it even, you know, more accessible, more beautiful. Now, the thing is, we decided we were only going to use Joyce's words. We
mm-hmm.
did shift them round. So there's
yeah.
sentences and places where it actually, so it begins to make more sense. We also put in some more pronouns, especially names. You know, Leopold Bloom and Blazes Boyle and Stephen Dedalus. Because in the text, it's sort of confusing as to whom Molly is talking about. So we didn't try it's not like simplifying it, because the
yeah.
thing is vastly complicated. But what Aideen then finds is what I would always think of is the true texture behind the words. So she's true. I imagine that if in some wonderful miracle, Joyce were able to come back and sit down in the Irish Rep, you know, tomorrow and watch Aideen Maloney, he'd sit there. And he'd nod his head, and he'd say, "Well, there you go." He somehow
yeah.
found her. And also, the thing is, Aideen comes from Dublin. Aideen is Molly. She feels like Molly. She looks like Molly, and she sounds and so she inhabits it in the most extraordinary way for me.
You know, as Aideen acknowledges, you know, for some 15 years, oh God, time is slipping by, you know, since you started that Bloomsday celebration at the Ulysses
yeah.
pub, down on Storm Street, in the financial district, you know. It was something, again, as she acknowledged the other night in a great Q&A after the opening of, you know, of what is, you know, a play and a book. Yes, Reflections of Molly Bloom, that, you know, she says that, she admitted that, you know, when she was about 10 or 11 years of age, she found Ulysses, you know, at home and in the secrecy of candlelight and, you know, and the flashlight under the sheets.
Right.
She got a somewhat of a grasp of some of it, and then she couldn't shake it off. It took, you know, when she revisited it back in her 20s, and it really it gnawed into her, her being, right. and again, but bring us, if you will, back to. You know, to Bloom's Day celebration down on Storm Street, and who was the audience?
Oh, well, this is really interesting. Well, first of all, you know, huge thanks goes to Danny MacDonald and everyone involved in Ulysses, and they sort of
absolutely,
opened it up.
Yeah.
And I will never forget the day we opened it up, because it was myself and Frank McCourt. And myself and Frank went in, and we had the first pint that were poured officially on the opening day, and you were good friends with Frank as everyone was, and you know, for a couple of years Frank came down there and you know, read alongside us, and we started it off, and we thought, we'll just do it for a year or two, and now, you know, that's the way time goes, as you know. Suddenly you wake up and you say it's 16 years now, or 15 years, and it's amazing, because we get people, hardcore Ulysses fans, coming along, but we also get people who want a bit of crack, you know, they just want to, like, hang out and, you know, have a glass of wine and eat some gorgonzola cheese and watch people in Victorian dress and whatever else happens to be, and have a laugh listening to this profound, you know, book which sort of encapsulates the human spirit. And basically everyone gets up and reads for just 2 or 3 minutes, and we have Larry Kerwin comes along, you know, from Black 47, and we all sorts of wonderful people come, and we just sit down there and you know, admittedly we have a bit of a sing song and a few pints, and why not, and it just becomes, to me, you know, the quintessential Irish celebration. But you also get these bankers going past, the guys down on Wall Street, and some fellows, you know, like lawyers and people, like, and they're stopping a moment and saying, "What is your woman talking about?" Because Aileen's there at the microphone, or I happen to be there, or Larry happens to be there at the microphone, and they're hearing this sort of extraordinary language, and sometimes good language, sometimes bad language. And they stop. And lo and behold, you'd be amazed by this. A lot of them just stop in the middle of their lunchtime or whatever happens to be on the way home. Tomorrow starts at 5 in the afternoon, but they stop and they sit down and they listen to this stuff, because it feels to them, and as it feels to me, like one of the, you know, sort of original experiences. And it's a great New York moment too. You know, and Bloom's Day is happening now all over the world. So tomorrow, you know, they'll be in Davy Byrne's pub in Dublin, but they'll also be, you know, in Osaka, there's a big celebration. Down in Atlanta, Georgia, there's a big celebration. In Santiago, in Chile, there's a big Bloom's Day celebration. And increasingly, and I think we're going to see it more and more and more over the next couple of decades, Bloom's Day is going to tie us together, and the Irish government has been so smart about, like, bringing the cultural elements together and recognizing the unifying power of culture. I mean, they've always supported artists. They've always supported initiatives that break down barriers. And Ulysses, and you know, anything that's spun out of Ulysses, including Yes, you know, the Aideen's performance, they are designed to sort of increase the Irish lungs of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this play, I'm sure, will go all over. We've already been invited to the Czech Republic and to France, and almost 100% certain we'll go to Ireland with it, you know, her interpretation. And what a wonderful thing for Paddy Maloney's daughter. Now, Paddy's music is in the play.
Oh, yeah.
But for Paddy Maloney's daughter to come back from New York with an Irish play and sort of say, ah, here we go, that's the... You know,
yeah,
it's like the world coming full circle.
Definitely, you know, Aideen, you know, allows the audience, you know, to hear Joyce's miraculous work of art, you know, as it is intended in the voice of an Irish woman of a dub through and through. You know, completely, one would say that there is no room for censorship, you know, in Joyce, you know,
right.
And if you try to, you know, take poetic license, you're killing it. You're working
right.
against yourself, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
Yeah,
and that's something we have to be really careful of, you know, in cutting this, you know, 3.5 hour piece down to a little over an hour, what are you going to lose? And then the question becomes, what are you going to gain as well? Because there's a lot to gain from making this more accessible to everybody. Nobody should be frightened of Joyce.
Yeah.
A lot of people tend to be, because they think it's difficult. They think it's, you know, it's inaccessible. They think it's over their heads. Nothing's over their heads, you know.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, increasingly where art has to go. And I think Irish art has always sort of acknowledged this in a way. You don't condescend to your reader. You don't condescend to your viewer. You don't condescend to your listener.
Mm.
You always know that they're probably just as intelligent, if not more intelligent, than the artist herself or himself in the center of the work. And once you know that, then you can sort of go anywhere and do anything. And I love this sort of Beckett notion of failing as well.
You know, mm-hmm.
No matter, try again, fail better. Because it pushes you to the edge of a cliff. It says, okay,
yeah,
how far are you going to go?
Yeah.
And you know, we went pretty far. Well, first of all, Joyce went really far.
Yeah.
He did, in the words of Vonnegut, like, you go to the edge of the cliff, you jump off, and you develop your wings on the way down. and that's what Joyce did.
Yeah.
Well, we've gone to the edge of the cliff with this, and Aideen goes off the cliff with the performance.
Yeah.
And she sails out into the air, which is, you know, and there's been a lot of great actors taken on the role of Molly over the years. Some of our greats, in fact. But I have to say that for me, Aideen captures it like nobody else has ever captured it before, and it's kind of fun to watch it sort of unfold in front of your eyes.
You know, to have, you know, one woman taking on, you know, the role of Molly Bloom, and the soliloquy to do, you know, 75 minutes without even a, you know, it's not just a reading, the stage, the setting, there is... It's incredible. Just talk about the setting for a minute, in terms of, you don't know, first of all, when you go to the Irish rep, as we all know, their stage settings, their lighting, everything is state of the art. But to take the Molly Bloom character and, you know, to set it so that, you know, Molly is in a bed, but there is no bed. You know,
yeah.
that takes a lot of not only thought but talent and the perfection of the setting, which actually totally enhances the production and the superb performance of Aidan Maloney as Molly.
That's right. And the thing is, to do a show like this takes a collision of genius and intent. You think about Ciarán O'Reilly and Charlotte and everybody down there at the Rep, first of all, taking the chance, to put on this sort of show. Then you think about the director, Keira Simring, who, brings a new energy. She's American, she's a feminist. She brings a new energy to the idea of how she's going to direct it. Then come along these stage designers, and sound designers, and light designers, and somehow they create this space, which is the space of Molly's head. Like every other production that I've ever seen puts Molly in bed, and of course in the soliloquy in the book she's in bed, but the bed was uninteresting to us. We wanted to be inside her head, so the stage is designed so that there is a suggestion of a bed, but there's no literal bed. There's a Dublin outside, but it doesn't intrude. Leopold Bloom is not there in the room with her, but we can feel him there, after his night on the town with Stephen Dedalus, maybe a couple of pints rolling off him, and his old wet raincoat hanging in the cupboard there.
In the cupboard, which is very much a part of the set. As a matter of fact, it's very necessary for the set, because there's no entrance or exit, but there is, the closet, the cupboard. Yeah. Great.
It was. I mean, that cupboard. It's like the doorway into Molly's past. It's like the doorway into Leopold Bloom himself, but it's also like a doorway into Ireland. It's also like a doorway into Dublin. And she reaches in, and then she finds these things from her childhood and her young when she was a young woman, when she was in Spain, and she recalls her time in Andalusia, and her first love letters and her first kiss. She retrieves them all from the cupboard there. It's amazing, really.
It is, and it's a great work of art. And Aideen is the performer. Aideen brings it to it, but I know for a fact, says and means it that this simply could not happen without yourself, Colin McCann. And I think it really is a great tribute to, not just Aideen, but to you. You finally, put something out there that makes it easy. It makes it, it makes it easy to try, to just see what Joyce, the tremendous creativity of Joyce. It's and it's highly to be highly recommended. Just finally, before we leave, Bloomsday is and it's not just New York, but it has taken off the whole notion, the performances, the readings of Bloomsday. Take a look tomorrow. God help us, Father's Day was, not going to be the holiday of the year. But the reading itself. What is your? How would you define for us the 4 hours? And that's if you hurry up of the reading of Ulysses.
Well, if you read it straight through from beginning to end, it would take you 37 hours. And some people have done it before, online. They go through, they go through the readings, and they match up with one another from different places, from Slovakia, from Australia, from Ireland, and they do it straight through for 37 hours. For us tomorrow, down at Ulysses, and we're also doing an event with Origin Theatre tomorrow too, which is down on 58th Street, George Heston's wonderful Origin. There's events everywhere in Simpson Space and so on. Our event is kind of anarchic. Anybody who wants to read gets up and read, as long as they don't read for too long. I have a big shepherd's hook, and I drag people off the stage if they go on too long. But for me, it's an engagement with a book that will be around forever. It's also a way for me to go home without any of the corny stuff. There's no leprechauns. There's no none of the diddly idle stuff for me. For me, it engages on a sort of profound level, but it's fun. It's Irish, you know. And there's a great line in there. You know, what is my nation? Well, or what is a nation? Well, a nation is the same people living in the same place. And Big Odd says, Ned, for I'm a nation, and for I've been living in the same place for the past 5 years. And then Bloom says, are also people living in different places. And that salutes Irish America. It salutes Irish people all around the world because we are Irish. Mm-hmm. But we're also living in different places. And tomorrow is a great opportunity for us to celebrate that.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us. And again, in particular, for Molly Bloom, Colin McCann, again, thanks. Tomorrow, friends, you can, as a matter of fact, if you just go to your computer, and if you were to researcher, put in Molly Bloom, put in James Joyce. Again, you will find, you know, that tomorrow, just it has broadened the field of those who wouldn't dream of tackling any of the writings of James Joyce. But I want to tell you about one in particular, because it's only on from now until July 7th, and it's called, of course, Yes, Reflections of Molly Bloom, and it is playing at the Irish Repertory Theatre, this is a first, and it is something that is not for everybody, and if you have any hesitation at all, it's not for, the pure of heart. It's a great play. It is there, and it's playing up to July 7th. Tickets, 727irishrep.org. Telephone number, 727-2737. Check it out.